I'm just tired of your scenes, and there's nothing you could say that would make a difference.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Melrose Place. Today's episode, if you must know, is Season 2, Episode 16, Reunion Blues. And now here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello.
Before we get into today's episode, a tease for our next Patreon episode. It is dropping July 24th, and we will be watching Ms. Jenny Garth in Season 2, Episode 10 of The Mick, titled The Climb, which you can see on Hulu or wherever else you buy TV episodes. A very surprising episode. Didn't know, as I said in our last one of these, what we were getting into, and was pleasantly surprised. So look forward to our discussion of that. Go to patreon.com/againwiththis to support us and get access to our whole archive of past bonus episodes and all of the episodes going forward. Sarah, shall we talk about Reunion Blues?
Yes, let us.
All right. Starting with our C plot, Jo reconnects with her old flame, Reed. Allison is having breakfast before work at Joe's place. I cannot tell you how many ways this situation annoys me. First, Joe works for herself. She should not be dressed and hosting before 8 a.m., which it is established this is. She should be asleep for like 3 more hours, in my opinion.
Also, isn't it Christmas week?
Well, like
when?
We don't know how much time has passed since the last episode. Like, it could have been, this could be like 3 weeks later for all we know.
Well, but I mean, there is a point. This is why I bring this up. There are a bunch of annoying things about the reunion plot line, which I will get into when they come up. But one of them is, who has a reunion like holiday week? Because Billy makes explicit reference to the other night.
Oh.
When he and Amanda did it, which suggests to me that it's like December 28th.
Hmm.
So someone fucked up and it's annoying to me. Anyway, continue.
I guess. I mean, the other night is vague enough, I guess. It's, I mean, the only annoying thing is that it's because of when the episodes probably dropped, like, or aired, I guess. They didn't drop. This is the past. That he had to refer to it because it was soap and, like, recap what happened. But, you know.
Yeah, no, I mean, you're probably right, but this, like, goes to my extreme compulsion about the difference between a few and several.
Sure.
Namely, that several can be a few, but a few can't be several, because several's more.
Yeah, I mean,
a few.
Even if we say, like, this is, you know, January 10th, like, who would have a reunion on January 10th? No one. Like, it's not, that's not convenient.
Right.
Okay.
Also, why, I mean, it's Dan's birthday. Yay! No one else cares. He would not go to a reunion. Boo!
Yeah.
There are some other issues there involving some Noah Hunter-esque, where the fuck are you supposed to be from shenanigans? But
right.
Like I said, we'll get into it.
Yeah. I'm still annoyed about this breakfast. Allison should not have time on a weekday for a leisurely breakfast. She should have figured out the minimum time she needs to take to get ready before leaving it for her office. I hate this. Anyway. The reason this is happening is so that Joe can tell Allison her 10-year high school reunion is happening that weekend in San Francisco. Obviously, goth Joe doesn't want to go because she doesn't want to bring her failed marriage back to show off to all the people she hated back then. But Allison thinks that being a professional photographer is impressive and reunions are fun because, of course, that's what Allison thinks. And Joe decides maybe Allison is right for some reason. And if it's weird, she can just leave. And then there she is. Do you want to say how you described her outfit in the visual aids?
the widow's weeds. She's wearing basically, remember the Brenda widow walk on the beach when she thought she was pregnant? She's wearing that.
Yeah.
No one else is dressed like that. I think I called it that Emily Dickinson Cosplay Club vice president has checked in.
Yeah. It's a floor-length black burnout velvet turtleneck dress with a floral shawl, like, around her elbows. It's a lot. she checks in, gets a button with her old picture on it as it appeared in the yearbook so that her former classmates will recognize her. And Betty Benson, one of the women working the desk, can't remember Joe, but is shocked when Joe doesn't remember her either until she concedes that they didn't run in the same circles. But Betty was the president of their class. Clip two.
I'm Betty Benson, but you'd probably remember me as Betty Chappelle. But what's the diff, right? Well, see, now here's your button with your name and picture as it appeared in the yearbook. Name and face together, equal recognition.
Here are a couple of things that I would like to recognize. It is possible that I have forgotten where, canonically, Joe is supposed to be from, but she has so many references to her New York intuition that I am assuming, like the Hunters and their love of Mozart, they're supposed to be from back east, even though they have this, like, you know, family manse on the West Coast.
Yeah.
So why is her reunion in San Francisco? Mm-hmm. And why is the head of the reunion committee from Valdosta, Georgia?
These are great questions.
I don't get it. Mm. Why wouldn't your reunion be at the school? Why are you from San Francisco? Why is Miss Magnolia the class president? None of this makes any sense. Also, if you want to cast Jeff Fahey, have a bake sale and get enough money to cast Jeff Fahey, but we'll get into that also.
Yeah, so Joe decides not to wear her button, but immediately runs into a guy who recognizes her immediately. His name is Reed Carter. She seems to consider running into him a nice surprise. The shot that Sarah took of him is, like, as she said, very Jeff Fahey-esque, and shows him nicely because his lips are closed over his very prominent front teeth. All I can see every time he's in a shot is, like, teeth, such big teeth, but whatever.
He does have a somewhat, and that, like, 90s floppy hair.
Mm-hmm.
It's not helping young Wilder, but this dude shows up on Models Inc. like seconds after he's done in this gig on Melrose, mm-hmm. as a completely different person. So just something to keep in mind.
Neat. Yeah. James Wilder is the actor. He was not expecting to see Joe. She says she wasn't planning to go until she thought she might meet some old friends and then realized she didn't have any except Betty. He jokes. Betty then takes the stage to demand that they form two pep lines to welcome the 84 champs of something or other. And Joe is like, let's go. And they do. Outside, they argue about whether Joe stood Reed up at the prom. She spent that night in a tree in her backyard smoking cigarettes and staring at the stars because, of course, she did. Reed always pissed Joe off because he had life figured out, she says. Clip three.
You and everybody else knew that Reed Carter was going to be a combination of Jacques Cousteau and Luke Skywalker.
Yeah, but that didn't impress you, did it?
Here's why. That makes no fucking sense at all. Is he going to Bullseye Womp Rats in the Mariana Trench? Excuse me. The Mariana Trench. I couldn't do it without laughing. I just don't. It's like they left that line just like a timing track and then forgot to change it to something that makes sense.
Oh. Yep. Reed knew that Joe would be whatever she wanted to be. She was too strong to fail or to go steady with him. He suggests that she go up to his hotel room for a nightcap, and she counters with breakfast the next morning. He accepts, calling her a deep person. What? She tells him to cut the crap. He's not going to get her into bed. Over the negotiated breakfast the next day, Joe has just finished telling Reed all the stuff we already know about her and asks about his last 10 years. Turns out he just got out of a federal penitentiary. She thinks he's kidding. He is not. He did 2 years on a plea bargain for narcotics possession with intent to sell. He says he was innocent. He owned a fishing boat and took out a tour group who turned out to be smugglers. He lost his boat, his business, and 2 years of his life. He just wants to start over. Could they spend another night together in town, go to wine country, catch up? They can't because she has work. He asks if it's the jail thing. She says it's not. They'll do it another time. And then suddenly she's back home, having just recounted the tale to Allison. Let's talk about her outfit in this scene, too, by the way, because I think in her last scene with Steve, I described her as being like a long, you know, like Dorothy's Bornack tunic vest. And she's in another one of these, which is like a long cardigan over a long, long tunic with matching like palazzo pants. It's incredibly bizarre.
It really is. Like, I know it's winter, even in LA, like, it's cold, but must every inch, like, are you a Mormon? This is very weird.
It's in the visual aids, of course. She believes in Reed's innocence, but asks Allison if she sounds naive. Allison doesn't think so, but is probably the wrong person to ask about naivete. But when Allison learns that Reed lives in the Bay Area, she says it's probably a good thing, considering, and Joe sadly agrees that Allison is probably right. And Joe's in the courtyard bringing her laundry back to her apartment when she gets freaked the fuck out by the sudden appearance of Reed. Surprise! Okay.
He's like reverse Homer Simpsoning himself out of some plants. It's really creepy. I would have been like, get the fuck off this property for acting like that. That is so strange. Call first.
Yeah. Yeah. Did I tell you where I live? Yeah. None of that is established. But anyway. Yeah. That's where we leave these two. Moving on to our B plot. Sydney's attempt to return to straight life instantly hits the skids. Michael has hung on to his attitude of gratitude with Jane as she gets ready to go to work in her extremely ugly floral vest, which you can see in the visual aids. He's pumped to start physical therapy. He notices she's wearing the earrings he got her for Christmas, but not the necklace that Robert got her, except turns out she is. It's just inside her blouse, close to her heart. Also, he shouldn't wait up that night because she and Robert are going out. Bye! At said physical therapy appointment, Michael is struggling and shaking off Matt's encouragement, which, why is Matt even there? But whatever.
He also looks like he's just smelling a fart there, like... Surely you have work to do, Matt.
Yeah. Michael is also shaking up the therapist's advice, eventually falling face down. But in the process, he feels his foot, which is progress, and means he's going to be leaving this appointment on crutches. And that night, Sydney tries to be friendly with Michael while he sits in her section at Shooters. Ignoring how obvious he is being about not wanting to talk to her, she says it's slow, so she might just join him, but he snaps that she absolutely may not. She's the waitress. And Sydney, bless her, does not take fuck off for an answer. Clip 4.
I've seen the way you suck up to Jane lately, Michael. It's sickening. You really think she would take you back after you ran off with Kimberly and then turned around and did her little sister? Grow up.
Sydney, I am not interested in your opinion. You know what? I'm not interested in you.
You're a joke, Michael. The whole apartment building is a joke. I'm saving up my money and I'm moving out. I am sick of all you over-the-hill, over-sexed jerk-offs. And I'm going to get myself a nice apartment in the marina and a good job where I won't have to look at your face.
Fine. I don't care. Now, will you shut up?
Oh, I love them as a comedy team, but I also love her referring to them all as over the hill because they're like 4 years older than she is. Like,
if that. Oh, my God.
It's great.
I'm as surprised they got to say jerk offs in primetime, but OK.
Yeah. As Sydney leaves in a huff, Jake sits down to receive some of Michael's wisdom about women in clip 5.
Have you noticed that women have no sense of proportion? Everything in their life is a national emergency or a personal insult.
Yeah, I have noticed.
You know, you cross a woman, she cannot go on with her little life until she's tacked up your skin in her bathroom with all her other crap.
Wait a minute. You mean you and her?
Yeah, a couple of times. It was a while ago, what?
Well, you may not be God's gift, but you sure are God's revenge on women.
Yeah, I guess I am.
Can we talk about the music in the background also?
Uh-huh.
It's like a, I don't know, driver's ed film temp track. Like, here's what not to do. A goofus turns left without signaling. What the fuck?
Wait a minute.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah. The best part of all of this is the smug look of satisfaction that Michael gives at the end of this, with when Jake calls him God's revenge on women. He's like, yeah, I guess I am.
He's like, yep, that's yep. fair.
Which you can, of course, see in the visual aids. Jane and Robert are, for some reason, having sex at her place, even though he also has a place and lives alone, when Michael and Jake, both drunk, come back and make a ton of noise trying to be quiet. Jake offers to let Michael sleep on his couch, which, you know, maybe the time to make that offer was before you came in here, but Michael says he's fine, just as they both hear Jane make a sex moan, and it's awkward. Michael is pretending to be asleep the next morning while Jane and Robert in the living room say goodbye before Robert goes away to San Diego for 4 days. He comments on how weird it is that Jane's ex-husband is asleep in the living room while they're in love on the other side of the wall, but Jane promises it won't be for much longer. And when she closes the door after Robert, Michael pretends to wake up and asks if she notices anything missing, just his way of telling her that he's using crutches now rather than the wheelchair. Showing her he can stand on them, he asks for a congratulatory kiss, which she declines to give him. He guesses he'll be out of her way soon, and she nicely says that'll be good for both of them. Ooh, he did not think this through, and makes a worried face out of this scene. Over to Shooters, where Sydney delivers a dish to a patron, who then asks if she'll go out with him. She's very flattered, but declines. So he takes her by both hands and tells her that Lauren gave him her name and said he would never forget a date with her. He has a weakness for redheads. It's worth a lot of money to him. Sydney says he doesn't have enough. When she walks away from his table, he follows, grabbing her by the upper arm. Drink! To say he does have the money and is willing to spend a lot. And Sydney calculates and asks if he's willing to spend $2,000, eyeing her up and down. He nods. So, a very confident Sydney shows up at the Shooter's patron's hotel room that night, ready to transact some illicit business and discuss all the terms first in clip six.
So, how much is this?
Come on, don't play games with me. It's $2,000, and you know it.
So, what do I get for that?
Anything you want, Roy. The best sex you ever had, okay? Now let's see the money. Why don't we get started?
Sydney.
Hey!
You are under arrest. You have the right to remain silent. It can and will be used against you in a court of law.
Whoopsies!
Defund the police in a question mark?
So we assume that Lauren set her up. This is her punishment for trying to quit.
Oh, I don't know. I think she's going to be asked to, flip on Lauren, but I don't remember how this plot line plays out.
Interesting. I guess it could go either way.
Yeah, I wouldn't put that past Lauren. That's smart, especially if she has cops on the payroll, which she should.
Cost she should.
Doing business.
Mm-hmm. One commercial later, Michael's at the cop shop bailing Sydney out. Did you want to comment on the equipment used to...
With his green Amex, don't leave home for jail without it, and using the little slide thingy, which is like, I worked in a mall in 1990, and we still were not using those unless the Zahn went down. So that's like amazingly, maybe not for Amex. Doesn't matter. The point is the equipment is a little dated for a credit card transaction involving bail. You'd think LAPD would be a little more up on, the use of the telephonic lines to do these transactions, but no.
Yep. So Sydney's trying to convince Michael that her pandering charge is a misunderstanding. Obviously, he's unconvinced, and when he plants and waits for her to crack, she immediately does and tells him the truth. Michael's response is, of course, horniness at the news that she's, as he puts it, a whore. She cries and swears she's not anymore and begs him not to tell anyone, especially Jane. Last night she was screaming at him in Shooters, and now she's pleading for favors, he notes. He will only agree to try to keep his mouth shut, but tells her she owes him big. Sydney is eating Lay's on her bed in her extremely 90s plaid bodysuit. Oh, boy. This thing yeah. take me back.
Yeah, that particular, like, green-black mm-hmm. combo.
Oh,
yeah,
gorgeous.
It's all over my so-called life, too. Amazing.
Totally. When Michael crutches up, which he had to crutch up the stairs, so he really, really wanted this to happen instead of just phoning yeah. her and being like, can you come down? Anyway, he reminds her that he told her she owed him, and he's come up with a way that she can pay him back. She smiles lasciviously because she thinks that she's guessed what it is, but she's wrong. He wants her to find the hottest woman who ever worked for Lauren and send her to San Diego to honeypot Robert. Dun, dun, dun! Finally, our A-plot. Life as a jailbird's daughter suits Amanda poorly. Billy is working out shirtless. Like, I'm not mad, but I'm taking the camera's insistence on showing us the sweat pooled in his navel as a tribute to the late Joel Schumacher. You can see this in the visual aids if you don't believe me. It's a lot. I mean, props to the female slash gay male gaze, but wow, it really lovingly lingers on
and
his body.
All I could think about is that he is using to cushion his back during these crunches a couch, a cushion from the couch.
Yeah.
That you share. Gross.
Yeah, he's sweating a lot.
Get a yoga mat. It's mm-hmm. LA.
Did anyone have yoga mats in the 90s? I don't know.
They might have had some kind of, like, I don't know, exercise mat.
He could have certainly
anything
had
anything but that. Don't use that. Don't use that and put it back on the couch.
Right.
That's all.
I mean, he certainly had a towel. Like, I mean, he probably could have unzipped the cover and put it in the wash. Do I believe that Billy would do that? No, I do not.
No.
After Allison leaves for her pre-workday breakfast with Joe, which I'm still mad about, Billy sneaks out shirtlessly to see Amanda. She's all about it, except he just wants to make sure they're clear that they're fucking the other night, as we've previously discussed, was a one-time thing. He needs Amanda to promise that she won't tell Allison, and she chuckles that she won't. She adds that she thought there might be a chance that the two of them might start something back up again, but she forgot one important fact. Billy is a kid. Yeah, duh. He always has been. Come on, Amanda. This was really on you.
Him?
Yeah. So then Amanda tries to avoid confrontation by sliding Jake's eviction notice under his door, but he catches her in the act, not seeming too bothered by it, perhaps because, as he tells her, this move is completely illegal. She ignores that and tells him to be out by next week. When she tries to leave, he repeats that he didn't do anything to Palmer, and blaming Jake won't do anything. Joe is shooting a swimsuit spread on what is apparently a very chilly day when Amanda shows up to try to get her to write a letter detailing the damage that Jake did to her apartment so that Amanda can evict him. Joe curtly declines, so Amanda presses her point in clip 7.
Excuse me, but didn't this guy just dump you without even looking back?
Yes, and you had a hell of a lot to do with it.
No, it may have looked like that, but I swear I didn't. Come on, we are both women who've been taken advantage of.
Don't even try this sisterhood crap, all right? You're out for yourself. That's fine. Just leave me alone.
It really does take some balls to be like, hey, didn't this guy just fuck you over to date me? Like, I mean, you know.
The enemy of my enemy is Jake. I mean, it's a point of view.
Yeah. So when Joe gets back that night, she goes to Jake's place to tell him that she never cashed that check that he gave her. She knows he can't take that money, he says. She says he can just use some of it, like a loan. He can't change the way he is. He has to take care of things on his own. And for now, he has to get back to the want ads. Before she leaves, she has one last cue, clip 8.
Why in God's name did you get involved with Amanda? I mean, no matter how much you hated me at the time, you should have known better than to get involved with a bitch like that.
You know me, I love a challenge.
And you and me are still friends?
It's two questions. Yes, of course we are.
good.
Aw, I like them.
Yeah. Don't hold your breath.
I know. I'm not.
I mean, they, like, I think they do get back together, but, you know, fucking Reed.
I mean, I assume everyone gets back together with everyone else at some point during the run of the show.
Pretty much.
The crazy thing about watching that reunion, whenever that was, last month, the month before, sometime earlier in quarantine, April, March, February, last year, don't remember, was how many of them were in it, like, from the start to the end, like, this, which is crazy for a soap.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
The next morning, Billy and Amanda run into each other leaving for work at the same time. He says they don't have to be enemies, but she is uninterested in the suggestion that they could forgive and forget. So uninterested, in fact, that she calls Allison into her office at work and very seriously tells her this. Clip 9.
I have something to tell you. I think it'll be a little tough for you to hear at first, a little tough to take. But in the long run, I think it'll be to your benefit.
What is it?
Unfortunately, it has something to do with your personal life as well. Due to your romantic relationship with Steve McMillan and other unprofessional behavior, you are removed from the MicroComp account as of this morning.
But that's my account. I brought it in. I came up with a campaign.
This attitude is part of the problem. We all worked on the campaign. We're a team around here, which apparently you forgot when you slept with the client.
I did not sleep with him.
I am not stupid, Allison. I got reports on you and Steve in San Francisco, and it was hard to miss the Jeep with the bow around it in front of the building.
Amanda, this is completely unfair, and you know it.
You're welcome to contest it upstairs if you want, but I doubt you want to do that. Now, I want all your MicroComp records and files on my desk immediately. That means now, Allison.
Go ahead and say it. You know you want to.
What? Should have fucked Steve. You're paying the price anyway. I will also note that Allison is like off in sulky dream world, like a million miles away. And Amanda's like, step on it.
Yeah.
Files. Hello.
Yeah. I mean,
why are you such a mega bitch? Because I can be.
Yeah. The thing is, she was, even if she didn't sleep with him, which, as we've established, she should have, you know, she might as well, because she got all the blame for it, even though she didn't. She really was unprofessional. Like, she really was.
Yeah. On the other hand, wanting to bone her is, like, the only reason Steve even gave them the MicroComp account. So,
true.
Like, I don't know. Maybe just leave it where it is, but it's Allison, so I'm fine with her taking appropriate punishment for fraternization with the client.
Yeah, true. I mean, the other thing that she could mention, if she thought of it, and I don't know why she didn't, was like, he's in France for the next 6 months. Like,
yeah,
this is a non-issue. Look, I promise I won't sleep with this anonymous VP that we've never even seen. Anyway.
Yeah.
So Billy gets home from work that night to find Allison in bed with the TV, a pizza, and most of a six-pack of beer, which is the most I've liked her in, like, a season and a half of this show.
Yeah. Like, I was like, all right, fine. And then she mentioned double cheese, and I was like, all right,
yes,
fine.
And then she's like, and there's ice cream in the freezer. It's like, okay, fine. Like, no. Yeah. So she knows it looks bad, but at least it's not vodka. He guesses they're not going out. And she says if they do, she'll just go up to Amanda's apartment and kill her. And I guess she already called him at work to whine about what happened based on where she resumes said whining in clip 10.
The one thing I can't figure out is why now? It's like Amanda woke up this morning and decided to hate me. I don't know what her problem is.
Well, Billy knows, judging by the guilty over-the-shoulder look he gives the camera while he's hugging her. But anyway, he doesn't say anything.
Also, who doesn't?
Seriously.
Like, yeah, it's a little sudden, but better late than never. Team Woodward.
So Jake comes back from job hunting, I guess, to find all of his shit piled up in the courtyard and the locks changed on his apartment. Although, as you noted in your pictures for the visual aids, like, the decor we're supposed to think. I mean, one of the posters that we see in the courtyard, we later see he has rehung in his apartment after he's moved back in. But still, it's like very, very out of character. It's like the weird glassware in the kitchen in one of the previous visual aids. It's like, who is dressing Jake's apartment? Like, yeah. It's so weird what they've put in it.
Yeah, like there's like a statue that looks like, I don't know, a German shepherd, maybe?
Yeah. Yeah.
Some kind of hyena, uh-huh. And then this weird poster, and then he has like a cute little Dalmatian,
mm-hmm.
like crockery on his kitchen table.
Yeah.
No, like he's not a 14-year-old girl. What is all this stuff? Like, was 101 Dalmatians a Fox property? I don't think so.
Yeah, it's very strange. So he bellows at Amanda to come down and get yelled at, I guess. And she does in clip 11.
Keep this up, Jake, and I'll have you arrested for disturbing the peace.
You can't just change the lock on my door. Now give me the key.
I tried to be patient, but your rent check bounced. Now gather up your stuff and leave before I call the police.
Eviction is a legal proceeding, not some bimbo's whim. Now give me the damn key.
Forget it.
Fine. I don't need one.
Jake! Jake! This is destruction of property. You are in big, big trouble.
Stop it. You're scaring me.
There's a history of this. I've got another witness. Joe wrote a complaint about the damage you did at her place.
That's crap.
Afraid not. If I were you, I'd make sure I was gone by the morning.
So that smashy noise was him kicking his way into the apartment, which is apparently very easy because these doors are flimsy as hell.
Yeah.
But lying about Joe when she's out of town and can't defend herself is so, so shitty because, like, surely he can't believe that she would do that. But even just saying it is not great.
No, it's not. I will give Locklear credit. Like, she just sounds, I mean, of course, this has nothing to do with, like, Jake himself or the eviction or any of that. This is all like her daddy shit, but like she sounds really like raggedy and on edge in that clip. So good. Well done.
Mm-hmm. So the next night Jake is in the courtyard working on his bike, which I guess it really is over for him and Amanda. He's doing that again. When a soaking wet Amanda comes running downstairs saying that the faucet in her kitchen exploded and Jake has to help her. Jake blandly tells her to call a plumber. She's on hold with one, but it's an emergency. Well, Jake would love to help, but he's being evicted. Billy comes out of his place in a towel to complain that his water just turned off while he was in the shower and the ceiling is leaking. And he doesn't know anything about plumbing, of course, so when Amanda desperately asks Jake again to do something, he says he will if he can keep his apartment. And she agrees, but Jake makes sure that Billy has witnessed it before bringing his tools up to Amanda's place. Fixing it requires Jake to take his shirt off, which no one is mad about. Again, this episode is really so much more shirtless than any before, I think. And again, yeah. I'm not mad about it.
Yeah, I pander to me, please.
Yeah. So the next morning, Joe comes down to tell Jake they have a problem. He knows what. It's that the check bounced. She joke guesses that he tried to buy another bike, but he says if he doesn't figure his shit out, he'll have to sell the one he has. He's good for the money, but the feds have frozen the cash that Palmer paid him. So maybe he is and maybe he isn't. He is going to have to get a lawyer to straighten things out, but that'll take time. Joe's sorry he has to go through this. He says he'll survive and she will get her money. And she repeats for like the 500th time that it doesn't matter to her, but she knows it matters to him. So she'll be glad to get it whenever. And now he has a question for her. Clip 12.
By the way, Amanda said that you wrote a letter about what I did to your apartment.
That woman is such a liar. Jake, you know that I would never do that.
That's what I figured. I mean, she was pretty pissed at me when she said it.
I hope you're keeping her distance from her. I mean, she is not good for you. With everything that you're going through, you need someone who cares about you.
Come on, Joe.
What?
Well, it's you and me. We're not going to get back together. It just wouldn't work.
That's not what I'm saying. That's not what I want, either.
Okay. I just didn't want there to be any misunderstanding.
You're amazing. I mean, what kind of ego you must have to think that just because I'm being nice to you, you assume I want to jump back into your bed?
Joe, I didn't...
Believe me, that is the last thing on my mind.
I don't believe you. No. I've seen his abs.
The last thing on your mind. I mean, come on.
I know.
Even if it's not front of mind, it's in there somewhere.
Yeah, it is. It absolutely is.
Yeah. Come on. So upstairs, Amanda's meeting with a plumbing contractor and reminding us all that, like cops, all landlords are bastards. Glip 13.
All right, so I want heavy-duty shut-off valves throughout the apartment, all the fixtures, everything first class.
So that'll be the entire complex. You want everything to be up to code, right?
No, just my apartment for now. I'm not sure when I'll get to the others exactly.
What a shithead.
It's also so short-sighted. Like, if something goes wrong in one of the other apartments, you have to pay for that anyway. So you might as well, like, you know, it's like that episode of The Simpsons where they have to fix the foundation. It's like, I have a washer in my truck. I'll switch it out for you right now. It's like, get out of here. Like, it's probably the smaller expense now versus fixing something that breaks later. But whatever. Yeah.
Also, it means you could charge more in rent if you have all Kohler appliances.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. Anyway, after the plumbing contractor has left, Amanda
we're
picks
so
up.
Middle-aged. I love that we're like, look, that just doesn't make sense. Come on.
Yeah. Speaking of what's front of mind for me, it's not Jake's abs. It's, oh, yeah, our air conditioner. We got to really replace that soon, probably. Anyway, after the plumber has left, Amanda picks up the phone. It's her dad wanting to meet, which they do, in a park where, as we said many times, Ray Catfish, nothing good ever happens. Uh-huh. And that's also true this time. Clip 14.
I've been talking to my lawyers, and it doesn't look good at all for our side. It looks real bad, as a matter of fact.
Well, the important thing is that you're innocent. That's all that really matters. And if these lawyers can't do the job, then we'll get out.
That's just it. I'm not.
What?
I'm not innocent. I did everything they said I did. All of it. I needed cash, and a lot of it. So I kind of sweetened the business. Anyway, it doesn't matter now.
Daddy, no.
I know you don't understand this. But I did what I felt I had to do. And I'm sorry I had to lie to you. You see, I've done this kind of thing before. Had some close calls. But this time, they caught up with me.
And that's supposed to make a difference? You lied to me. You're a criminal.
Yeah. I guess I am.
Well, there it is.
Yep.
Better late than never, I suppose. So he goes on to say that he's going on the lam. He can't go to jail. He wouldn't last. And he says he'll make it up to her, but she just flatly says no and leaves. And that night she goes to Jake's apartment to tell him that Palmer confessed and Jake was right all along. She starts to cry and he holds her. And I guess their reunion is underway as well. And that's it. So let us name our episode MVP. I'm going to say the director who chose to give us so many shirtless beefcake shots because they really helped me through a tough time this week.
I support that 100%. And I will give an honorable mention to Heather Locklear, who is like as a person, like as a character, Amanda is not having a great week. She's being kind of a shitwad.
Yeah.
But acting wise, she did a great job in that last scene that we heard. You can see her thinking, like, oh shit, like I completely turfed everything with Jake based on this bullshit that my dad told me. Like, she does a good job. So, yeah. Locklear.
Mm-hmm. All right. Least valuable player.
Class of 84 reunion committee. Decide yeah. where you're from. Don't have the reunion in January or December 28th or whenever the fuck it's supposed to be. Don't have it in San Francisco.
Yeah.
Ew. And don't fucking tell Reed the Creeper where Joe Reynolds lives. Come on.
Yeah. I'm going to say, relatedly, the continuity editor who like fucked up all of that because none of that makes sense. Like, you know, we're supposed to think that Joe has some money. Like, she makes money as a photographer. She could get on a plane. But yeah. that would screw up the whole thing of like, well, this guy couldn't easily also get on a plane if he's still on probation or parole or whatever and couldn't leave the state and he might not have money. Blah, 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 blah. I assume that's the reason that it had to be San Francisco, but still, it's dumb.
It is. Speaking of dumb, next time on Again With This, with the Amanda away, the Allison will play. And when Jane presses play on Michael and Sid's Robert Entrapment tape, all hell's gonna break loose. Your retinas might break loose when you get a load of our visual aids, but we did them anyway for this and every other episode of Again With This. You'll find those on our website, againwiththispodcast.com. To learn more, follow us on Twitter at AWT90210 or meet us on a bench in sunny Patreon Park before you go on the lam. That's patreon.com/againwiththis. I'm Bail Only Amex, Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is tenants' rights organizer Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is yearbook photo pin David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.